ஓம் நமோ பகவதே வாசுதேவாய. நாராயணம் நமஸ்கிருத்யம் நரம் சைவ நரோத்தமம் தேவிம் சரஸ்வதிம் வ்யாசம் தத்தோ ஜயமுதீரயேத். நஷ்டப்ராயேஷ பத்ரேஷு நித்யம் பாகவத சேவயா. பகவதி உத்தம ஸ்லோகே பக்திர் பவதி நைஷ்டகி. கிருஷ்ணாய வாசுதேவாய தேவகி நந்தனாய ச நந்தகோபகுமாராய கோவிந்தாய நமோ நம. ரீடிங் ஃப்ரம் கேன்டோ 11 சாப்டர் 15 டெக்ஸ்ட் நம்பர் 13. தாரயன்மய அஹம் தத்வே மனோ வைகாரிகே அகிலம் சர்வேந்திரியாணாம் ஆத்மத்வம் ப்ராப்திம் ப்ராப்னோதி மன்மனஹ. தாரயன்மய அஹம் தத்வே மனோ வைகாரிகே அகிலம் சர்வேந்திரியாணாம் ஆத்மத்வம் ப்ராப்திம் ப்ராப்னோதி மன்மனஹ. தாரயன்மய அஹம் தத்வே மனோ வைகாரிகே அகிலம் சர்வேந்திரியாணாம் ஆத்மத்வம் ப்ராப்திம் ப்ராப்னோதி மன்மனஹ. Dharayan, concentrating, Mai, in me, Aham Tatve, within the element of false ego, Manaha, the mind, Vaikarike, and that which is produced from the mode of goodness, Akhilam, completely, Sarva, of all living entities, Indriyanam, ஆத்மத்வம் ஆஃப் த சென்சஸ், ஆத்மத்வம் ப்ரொப்ரைட்டர்ஷிப், ப்ராப்திம் த மிஸ்டிக் பர்ஃபெக்ஷன் ஆஃப் அக்யூசிஷன், ப்ராப்னோதி ஆப்டெயின்ஸ், மத் மனஹா த யோகி ஹூஸ் மைண்ட் இஸ் ஃபிக்ஸ்ட் இன் மீ. Translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Fixing his mind completely in me within the element of false ego generated from the mode of goodness, the yogi obtains the power of mystic acquisition by which he becomes the proprietor of the senses of all living entities. He obtains such perfection because his mind is absorbed in me. Purport. It is significant that in order to acquire each mystic perfection, one must fix one's mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that those who pursue such perfections without fixing the mind in the Supreme Lord acquire a gross and inferior reflection of each mystic potency. Those who are not conscious of the Lord cannot actually synchronize their minds perfectly with the universal functions and therefore cannot elevate their mystic opulences to the universal platform. Om Ajnanadmirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakya. चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देहं श्रीगुरोः श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवम् साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्णकरुणासिन्धो दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते। तप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरे विषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे, हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। फिक्सिंग हिज माइंड इन मी विद इन द एलिमेंट ऑफ फॉल्स ईगो जनरेटेड फ्रॉम द मोड ऑफ गुडनेस, the yogi obtains the power of mystic acquisition by which he becomes the proprietor of the senses of all living entities. He obtains such perfection because his mind is absorbed in me. So the title of this chapter is Description of Mystic Yoga Perfections, the conversation between Sri Krishna and Uddhav. So I'll just read out the summary of it. This chapter describes the 8 primary and 10 minor mystic perfections, and they are developed by fixing one's mind in yoga, but they are ultimately obstructions to achieving the spiritual abode of Lord Vishnu. Being questioned by Uddhav, Lord Sri Krishna describes the characteristics of the 18 mystic perfections and the particular kind of meditation by which each is achieved. In conclusion, Krishna states that one who desires to perform pure devotional service to the personality of Godhead, the achievement of these mystic perfections is a waste of time because they distract one from proper worship. All these perfections are automatically offered to a pure devotee, but he does not accept them. Unless used in the yoga of devotional service, these perfections are valueless. And a devotee simply sees that the personality of Godhead is always present everywhere, both externally and internally, and depends completely upon Him. Hare Krishna. So I was hearing the classes given by the previous speakers, and this theme has been going on since quite some time now. And even the previous chapter was based on similar concepts of yoga system, Ashtanga Yoga, elaborately described. And a lot has been spoken already, a lot of examples has been given. So, still there could be some deliberation to some different examples which may throw light on this subject. So here, now because yoga is so popular in all over the world, it's very relevant to discuss this aspect because many even devotees are taking up to learning yoga in order to preach, things like that. So, Prabhupada points out actually, and Shukdev Goswami and Lord Krishna himself personally is saying here that the very essential part of Ashtanga Yoga is to be absorbed in meditation on Krishna, which is the essence. And unfortunately, today, in this time and age where yoga is being taught, there is no discussion or there is no emphasis on this very important aspect of Ashtanga Yoga, which is to put Krishna in the center and the goal of yoga, of Ashtanga. So then, you know, the asan, yam, niyam, and all the rules, regulations, and the exercises, they take a predominant role. And people are like, you know, caught up in, and basically they don't even know the goal of Ashtanga and all the yoga systems, which is to attain bhakti, you know, which is to attain liberation. In fact, many people, they do Ashtanga Yoga for, you know, for many other purposes, for physique, for good health and stress relief and discipline, and they can't control their senses. And Ashtanga Yoga is a very good system for controlling our senses. So then they take it up. But after they attain good health, then they go back to sense gratification. You know. So therefore it helps. Ashtanga Yoga can help in all those things. But the goal should never be forgotten. Goal is devotion to Krishna. You know, somebody was saying that caption that your pant says yoga. The people have these pants. Yeah. Your pant says yoga, and your paunch says McDonald's. So basically, you know, people struggle with trying to control their senses. You know, you have to follow a discipline. Yam niyam. You have to be a brahmachari. You cannot be a grihastha and practice yoga. You cannot be in the city. You have to go into the forest. Shuchavadeshe pratishthapya. You have to be fearless, because, you know, being alone in the forest is not easy. And you have to control your eating and all those things. You have to eat fruits and roots and all those things. It's not even practical, all these things, in the age of Kali Yuga. So therefore, this system of yoga is not for everyone. It's not for everyone, and it's not recommended by the Lord. And therefore, bhakti yoga is the process for people in the age of Kali Yuga. This yoga system was mentioned in, was prescribed for people in a previous age of Satyug, where people were more pure and very strict. And, you know, when it was not that the devotional service was not there, chanting of the holy names was not there in Satyuga. It was there, but still people practiced this very difficult process because they were more capable. So along with bhakti, they would also practice Ashtanga. But today, it is just not practical. It is an obsolete system, which is meant for people, you know, millions of years ago. And to try to practice that today is ridiculous. In fact, it's impractical. It's like using, you know, the obsolete operating systems on your computer, like we used to use, you know, that Windows 95 and things like that in the initial days of launch of, you know, those kind of, you know, different Windows-based applications. So if you try to use that in our modern computers, it's just not practical. So you have to update it. You have to have the latest technology. So similarly, the latest technology, technique for attaining perfection in life is to practice Bhakti Yoga. In essence, that is what Krishna is trying to tell. So, the Lord is explaining what are the results of practicing yoga and what are the obstacles which can come when a person tries to practice bhakti, Ashtanga Yoga. And he says, one of the things that follows when you practice Ashtanga Yoga is you get these mystic perfections. You can become smaller than the smallest and you can become bigger than the biggest. And there are 18, and 8 of which are primary and 10 of them are secondary. And there are actually unlimited perfections which you can get. But primarily there are 8 and secondary there are 10 and tertiary there are many others. So, these mystic perfections are not illusions, they are not magic. Like these magicians, they may show some magic and you know, they make something disappear and they make something appear and things like that. But it is not magic, it is actually powers which can bend the laws of nature. And there are so many examples which were given for that. Prabhupada used to give the example of Trilinga Swami. 100 years before Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada used to say that there used to be one yogi in Banaras and he used to roam around naked. And the government didn't like that, so they warned him that you shouldn't do this, but he still continued moving around like that. And so the police came and arrested him and put him in prison. And he would just escape, he would just get out again. And he would be still found roaming around in the streets of Banaras. And people were amazed, and how did he end? The police were amazed that how come this person got out. And again they would arrest him, put him in prison, and again he would be outside. So he could not be restrained, because he would reduce his size and get out of the prison cell. And they just couldn't understand how he could do that. Prabhupada gives another example of his teacher, who used to teach him in school, and his spiritual master, his guru, so-called guru, was a mystic, and he used to say that he had the power to acquire objects from far off places, and he could extend his hand and grab a pomegranate from Afghanistan. So that's what Prabhupada said. So these are all not something make-believe, these are actually the facts that such yogis existed. It is not some myth, it is not mythology. These powers actually do exist. And someone said that, that one yogi was doing this, demonstrating this mystic perfection of walking on water. Yes, and everyone was there and he walked, I think Devanand Pandit Prabhu was saying, and then he walked on water, crossed the river, and everyone was amazed. And then somebody passed a comment, "Are ye to do kodi ka, ye to kala hai. I pay the boatman and I can cross the river, is it not? So what's so great in crossing the river or walking on water?" Yes, I mean everything said and done, but still, what is the uniqueness of that skill is that no one else can do that. You are defying the laws of physics. If a human being can walk on water, that's something which no ordinary person can do. So by doing such a feat, by attaining that mystic perfection, the yogi attains godlike status, because he does something which is extraordinary, and naturally then you attract attention, you become famous. And then people start thinking, "Are ye to Bhagwan hai, ye to Bhagwan hai. Okay, oh my God." And then people come and start worshipping you. And in India especially, people are very gullible. Prabhupada said, India is a place, is a conveyor belt of incarnations of gods. Every month there is some new incarnation who says that I am God. So then the yogi may get trapped in the name, fame, prestige which comes along with that. Becomes so powerful. And he may claim to be God and cheat people. And he may exploit people. So the goal of it, this is just a byproduct. These powers are not the goal, they are just a byproduct. But then the yogi may get distracted. It's like, say, maybe, you are going for a marriage. You're going to attend a marriage. And then you wear your best of clothes and you're putting a perfume and you're on your way. And then you come across your neighbors or someone, your friend, and he says, "Arey, you're looking so great. Kitna dashing lag raha hai, kya kapde, kya superb, kya scent mara hai, very good, yaar. Majidar, superb, yaar. Very good, you're so well dressed." And he says, "Okay, thank you very much." And then he returns and he goes back home. So he forgot for what he was dressed, for what he was wearing, all that scent and everything. Yeah. So he forgot the purpose. He was dressed up for going for a marriage, to meet the bride and the groom, and you know, to do what that was his purpose. But then when someone appreciates him, and he comes back. That means he has forgotten for whom he was dressed. So when a yogi is practicing all these processes and he gets all these things, then he gets accolades, he gets appreciation, and there is a tendency for him to forget the goal. The goal is that he's acquired all these things, but ultimate goal is to please Krishna. Just as a man may have to go for a marriage, he should not turn back. So also a yogi may become distracted and he may think this is the ultimate goal, that I've got all these accolades, so I must be God. So there's a story, you know, of that yogi who went to the Himalayas and he was completely isolated from human civilization. And he would only come once in a year from the Himalayas down. And all the people would say, "Are maha yogi aaye hain, are pranam, dandavat pranam," and you know, so many people would come and assemble and fall at his feet and take his blessings. So he became very famous as a great yogi. So he went, and every year he would come down, many people would gather. So one day he came and he saw that there was no one there to receive him. And he started thinking, "What's wrong? I mean, am I on the right time? Did I come early?" I mean, because the time when he would come was prescribed. It was exact. Everyone knew when he would come and no one was there. And he was anxiety. He was looking around. He was looking, "Where are the people? Why aren't they here?" And then he became so inquisitive to find out where are the people that he climbed on a tree. Still he couldn't see, and then he climbed higher and higher and higher, and then he fell from the tree, fell and he crashed onto the ground and he died. That was the end of the yogi. So these kind of real powers to become bigger than the biggest, become smaller than the smallest, can actually distract a yogi. These are the pitfalls. However, we have seen in scriptures of yogis who are using these siddhis for devotional service properly. And they are devotees, they are not even ashtanga yogis, but they also possess such powers. Like Hanuman, he had the power to become bigger than the biggest. We see that when he crossed, you know, the ocean from Rameshwaram, he went to Lanka, comes across this demoness who opened her mouth to gobble up Hanuman, and Hanuman became big, and she also became big, and then he became even bigger, and finally he became very small, entered into the mouth and came out. So Hanuman had this power to become bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. Hanuman had the power to fly, jumped from Rameshwaram, went to Lanka. And there is one whole kand in the Ramayana known as Sundar Kand, just detailing the teachings from that journey of Hanuman from Rameshwaram to Lanka. Now if you analyze, there is nothing so great about Hanuman jumping from Rameshwaram to Sri Lanka. Because the acharyas say that what to speak of Hanuman who jumped, even for that matter Surpanaka, or for that matter Khar, Dhushan, and not only them but all the contingent of armies who were stationed at Janasthan close to Nasik, you know, they were all moving back and forth from Lanka to Nasik, Maharashtra, which is kind of quite central Maharashtra, India, quite a distance, is it not? So Shurpanaka, after her nose was cut, she flew to Lanka, so she also could fly. Khar Dushan, who was stationed as generals there, they also were giving reports to Ravan as to what was happening there.
So it was a regular route of all the Rakshasas who were going to Lanka and coming back. So if Hanuman could fly from Rameshwaram to Lanka and he could leap, it was not something so unique. I mean, it was previously done by the Rakshasas and they were doing it regularly. So what's so great? What is so great? The greatness, therefore, is not in his jumping. The greatness is because he was on a sacred mission of serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the sacredness of Sundarkand is the teachings that you get because of the attitude that you learn from the attitude which Hanuman had when he was on that mission. How when Mainak Parvat appeared, he offered his comforts. He said, Hanuman, rest for a while. And Hanuman said, no, I cannot rest. I'm on a mission. Till I complete this task, I cannot rest. And so many such teachings that how a devotee should not rest till he, you know, or he should be enthusiastic in his service, to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that was the main thing. It's all about service. And in fact, Hanuman has done even far greater, feats, like jumping, flying. That's not the longest distance that he flew, actually. If you see that when Indrajit, he shoots the Brahmastra on Lakshman, and Lakshman is actually he was in comatose stage. At that time, Jambavant tells Hanuman that you go to the Himalayas, go to that mountain and get that mountain with Sanjeevani booty. So Hanuman went. He made that journey all the way from Lanka. I was just inquisitive and I just googled what is the distance from Sri Lanka to Kathmandu, to the Himalayan ranges. It's about 2,300 kilometers. If you take a flight, it takes about 8 hours, 8 hours flight. And Hanuman, he flew there in one night. And not only did he fly there, but he came back with a mountain. Now that's a huge luggage. If you have to travel by flight, you're only allowed how much? 45 kilos. International flight, 45 kgs. Hand luggage, 7 kilos or 15 kilos at maximum. Now he comes flying back with a huge mountain. That is a huge mystic potency that we had. Imagine if any one of our devotees had that potency. How useful it would be for, service of Radha Gopinath. Getting all those flowers and, all those things from Vrindavan for Pushyabhishek, tons, 3-4 tons of flowers are brought every year. And you just go fly, Vrindavan, order flowers and just bring it here. That's it. No transportation charges, no nothing. What a technology. And Hanuman did that. He went there all the way and came back in one night. In one night. That means at what speed he traveled. And as if that was not enough, then Jamvan said, okay, the work is done. When Lakshman was revived, then Jamvan told, now you go and keep it back. So he went again and he kept it back and he came. He could have said, rehne do na idhar, kaam mein aayega, aage chalke. Aur bhi log, bandar log marenge, to unko jeevit kar sakte hai na, abhi udhar jaake rakhne ki kya avashyakta hai? What is the need to again go back and bring, keep it? But Hanuman just obeyed orders because purpose has been met, now you go and keep it. Because it will be misused. Went and kept it. And respect for nature, you see. But generally today people are so irresponsible. People cutting down trees and all. So nature has to be respected. So he went and put back the mountain in its place. And that was not the only time he went. Again, if you see that when Ravan comes, then finally when Indrajit is killed and all his brothers are killed and all the army generals are killed and only Ravan was left. At that time Ravan comes outside. And Lakshman is fighting, Vibhishan is fighting against Ravan, and Ravan then he releases another very deadly missile. Again it hits Lakshman and again Lakshman collapses. And he's like nearly fainted and he's nearly half dead. And then again then Sushen says, the Ayurveda doctor says, Hanuman, again you'll have to go. Do the work again. Go again to the Himalayas. And again Hanuman flies. Again he brings it back. Again he goes back. And again he comes back. And that's four trips per night. And as if that was not enough, if you go to Rameshwaram, what do you see? You see that there is one shivling which was brought by Hanuman. One shivling which was constructed by Sita out of sand. There are two shivlings in Ramnath Swami temple. Now if you ask the history of that shivling, One of the shivlings made brought by Hanuman was brought by Hanuman from Kailash before Lord Ram even went to Sri Lanka. So that means he made another trip before even, they went to Lanka, is it not? How many trips is Hanuman making? He could have said, my God, kitna seva, I'm only doing all the seva. Going back and forth, back and forth. But see his dedication to the mission of Lord Ram. And he properly used all his powers in Krishna Sabha. He never became proud, he was so humble. And when he was in Lanka, when Ravan asked Hanuman, who are you? And he said, I am simply a servant. I am simply a servant of Lord Ram. You are Kam Kadas, I am Ram Kadas. And he said, I am just a simple monkey in the general huge army of Ram. I am just one of them. There are far greater warriors. So that was Hanuman's humility. So we find such devotees also having these mystic powers which they have attained by the grace of the Lord. If you go to Badrinath, we see that there is a Badri Vishal, Lord Narayan himself. There is a legend which says that once Narada goes to Vaikuntha and there he was sleeping, Lord Narayan is sleeping, Narayan is Mahavishnu sleeping, Garbhodaka Shai means to sleep. Garbhodaka, Shai Vishnu, Shirodaka, Shai Vishnu, Mahavishnu, all are sleeping only. So Narad said, you are always sleeping. What inspiration will your devotees get? Get up, do something, set an example for your devotees. Do some austerity, do some tapas, do some ashtang yoga. So all right, okay. So then Narayan comes to Badrinath. He comes there and he's sitting in Naranarayan. Both are sitting in Padmasan and doing ashtang yoga. Setting an example. Yeah. Lay down the path of Ashtanga Yoga, basically. So these processes are there. Different shlokas for different folks. If some people ask that if Bhakti Yoga was the most potent process, then why to even mention all these yoga processes? Why did the Lord create these yoga processes? Karma, Jnana, Ashtanga, Sankhya and all these things. Well, actually, we can appreciate Bhakti Yoga better when you compare Bhakti Yoga to all these other yoga systems. Is it not? Like if you say that something is big, if you say this stand is a big stand, it makes no sense unless you compare it with something. Is it not? Like if you bring another stand which is smaller than this and you keep it together, then you say this is big, it makes sense. Because everything in this world is relative. If Krishna would have said, Bhakti Yoga is very simple, do it, he would have said, what is it to be compared with? But now we can compare it with Ashtanga, we can compare it with Gyan, we can compare it with Sankhya, we can compare it with all other yoga systems and say, just see how easy it is. What do you have to do for Bhakti Yoga? Nothing. I mean, it's so simple. That's why Krishna says, Yajnanam Japa Yajnosmi. And out of all the Yajnas, Japa Yajna is the supreme, because it's so sulabh, it is so easily accessible to everyone, one and all. So that is one of the very important things. And so these mystic potencies, they kind of may distract someone, because when you become strong, when you become sabal, when you become empowered, then you lose your saral. You fail to be saral. To be sabal and to be saral is a very rare combination. To be victorious, to be vijay and to be vinay is a very rare combination. So therefore, the Lord, he very sparingly awards these blessings, these great empowerments to his devotees, because unless he is not convinced, someone can rightly use, otherwise the power can be misused. All these highly. We can see how even in the Bible, stories of Jesus Christ having all these mystic powers. There was some discussion that, you know, about how Jesus, from the age of 13 to the age of 30, no one knows where he was. So there are accounts where Jesus, they said, that came to India and sat with yogis and learnt all these mystic meditations, and he perfected these mystic perfections. And he could heal, he could, you know, walk on water and do such things like that. So these are all mystic potencies. There is one episode of Lazarus of Bethany in the Bible story, of how one of his disciples, one of his followers, whose name was Lazarus, he became very ill. So his relatives, his family members wrote a letter to Jesus saying that Lazarus is very ill, please come. And Jesus, he postponed his travel on purpose. And by the time he went, Lazarus was dead. And they had put him in a, you know, coffin kind of, and covered it with a stone basic coffin. And so all the members of the family of Lazarus were weeping, and they said, Jesus, why didn't you come on time? Just see, he's now dead, your follower. Jesus said, don't worry, those who have faith, they will be revived. And he said, and he prayed to the Lord, and he said, Lazarus, come out. And he requested some of his followers to open the coffin, and they moved the stone, and Lazarus just walked out of the dead. Out, he was dead for 3 days, and he just became alive again, brought him back to life. So those were the things, how, what he used in order to attract people. People were attracted to Jesus just by seeing his, you know, miracles, mystic. Actually, mystic perfections are everywhere in nature. If you see, you know, the fact that, I mean, I was in Wada recently, and I was just seeing all these tons of fodder kept there, close to the goshala. And I was wondering, isn't it a mystic potency in cows to be able to transform all this chara, all this fodder, into milk? I mean, a cow eats fodder and just gives milk. What a miracle food. You know, so there is mystic potency in all of creation. It's already there, we are not realizing it. So then there are so many episodes which are enumerated in Srimad Bhagavatam, like the episode of Durvas and Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish is a simple householder, nice devotee, and Durvas Muni comes to his house and welcomes him, please come. And he was fasting. He had already fasted, and he was about to break his fast. So the devotees told him that you take some charnamrit, that will be alright. It won't be transgression of etiquette. Because ideally speaking, the host should not eat before the guest. But if you take charnamrit, then it is okay. So Ambarish took a little charnamrit. Durvas, being a yogi, he understood what had happened. He felt offended. Oh, you have not respected me. I came as a guest and you ate before me. And he became so wild. And he took out a hair from his head and throws it on the ground and chants mantras and creates this demon and commands him to go and kill Ambarish. And Ambarish is so humble. And he folds his hand and he says, if the Lord wills it that I die now, so be it. But Ambarish had mystic powers, not of his own, but the Lord had bestowed Sudarshan Chakra always at his disposal. The Sudarshan Chakra was always there to protect Ambarish. Even though he never asked for it, but the Lord had graced him with that. And so the Sudarshan Chakra went and killed the demon and went behind Durvas. Durvas, who is none other than Yogi Raj, Lord Shiv. And Durvas is running around the universe. He went to Brahmalok, he went to Lord Shiva, he went to all the trinities, Vishnu, and they all said, we can't help you. The Sudarshan Chakra will kill you. We cannot help. We have no power to stop the Sudarshan Chakra. And it took Durvas 1 year to complete the circuit. And then finally he comes to Ambarish Maharaj. And Ambarish is still waiting. He has not eaten, obviously, because he is still the guest, is it not? Guest has gone for a stroll. So he has still not eaten. He is still waiting. Okay, he will come back. And he says, he falls at the feet of Ambarish. And Ambarish says, oh, please get up. And then we know the famous verse which he chants. Aho ananta dasanam He says, today I have seen the greatness of a devotee. Mahatvam drashtu madhyame, today I have seen your qualities. Krita gasopi yad rajan mangalani samihate. Even though I attacked you, but still you are forgiving. You are wishing me well. This is only a devotee. This is the greatness of a devotee. So Durvas is a yogi, but he was not free from the anarthas. He was not free from ego. He was not free from anger. He had not controlled his senses. And here is a devotee who had controlled his senses. And here we see a yogi who is falling at the feet of a devotee. It proves that a yogi is inferior to a devotee. A yogi himself is chanting the glories of a devotee. Oh, Ananta Dasanam. Ananta Das. Who is Ananta Das? Who is the devotees of Lord Narayan? Mahatvam drashtu madhyame. So they are glorious. And as if that was not enough, Ambarish is saying, okay, come. Never mind. Please come and honor Prasad. Waiting for you. Ambarish says, no problem. I will come. Let me go and get my... He had come along with the disciples. Disciples are not there. Disciples are all spread out because when Durvas was running around, they thought, okay, Maharaj kidhar gaye? Chalo, theek hai, hum log bhi jaate. So they all were spread out. So again, he went to search all those disciples. Are, where are you? Come for prasad. That took another 1 year probably, to find all the disciples. And when they assembled finally, so Ambarish is still fasting all that while. So that is the greatness of a devotee. Then we see Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad. Hiranyakashipu had performed austerity for thousands of years and he had become so powerful. And his son, 5 years old, all he was doing is chanting Hare Krishna. And furious at his son, how can you disobey my command? How can you do this? Follow me, not Narayan. Who's Vishnu? He's my enemy. Prahlad says, no. Narayan is supreme. We are all the servants of Narayan. Oh, I'll put you to death. Throw him into the dungeons. Throw him from the cliff. Throw him from the mountain. Get him trampled by the elephants. Get him bitten by snakes. Give him poison. And all these things are given to him. But he's not dying. Prahlad is just not dying. And Hiranyakashipu is scratching his head and he's thinking, I performed austerities for thousands of years. Brahma has personally blessed me and given me all opulences, all the mystic perfections except immortality. And here I can see my son has become more powerful. Even though he has not performed any austerities, any tapasya, nothing. He's just 5 years old. How did he attain these powers? So obviously we see that even devotees can attain mystic perfections. They can become good singers, or they can become good kirtaniyas, they can become good speakers, or they may become famous or whatever. These are all mystic perfections which are awarded by the Lord when a devotee practices Krishna consciousness. So there are chances that they can bewilder a devotee also. So therefore one has to be careful. So therefore the conclusion is that a devotee is not deprived of any of these opulences, mystic perfections that a mystic yogi attains by a performance of Ashtanga. So, Prabhupada gives so many such other examples of such mystic yogis. We see in the pastime of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that how there was this yogi called as Bhishak Sen, and big great yogi. He used to call himself as Vishnu, and he had two disciples whom he used to call Brahma and Mahesh, and they used to say, we are Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. And all the local villagers, they are so innocent, they say, oh Bhagavan, chalo, and they would go, and he would display magic. He would walk on fire and he would do all these things which was fantastic for people. So for common people, just naturally, accepted him as God, and he was abusing the women there and, misusing his powers, abusing the people. And Bhaktivinoda comes there and gets him arrested and chops off his head because he was a yogi. His locks. And because mystic yogis, they have powers in their hairs. So when his hairs were cut, He lost all his powers and he was reduced to just an ordinary man. So we hear of these yogis who have been, you know, such that they have abused their powers, and therefore Krishna tells Uddhav in the previous 20th verse of the previous chapter, he says, Uddhav, you cannot attain me through yoga. Na sadhayati mam yogo na sankhyam dharma uddhava na swadhyayas tapastyago yada bhaktir mamorchita. Na sadhayati mam yogo na sankhyam dharma uddhava. Not by yoga. Na sadhyati mam yogo na sankhyam, not by sankhya. Or by being very religious, dharma uddhava. Na swadhyaya, not by becoming a scholar of the Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita or for that matter any Vedas. Na swadhyaya tapas, not by doing a lot of tapasya. Yata bhaktir mamurjita, as a person who can become a devotee. Devotee only can attain me. Why like that? Because only a devotee can purify himself completely. All other yoga processes do not completely purify. That's why when Parikshit Maharaj asked this question, which is the best yoga process? And Shukdev Goswami explains that Kechid Kevalaya Bhaktya Vasudeva Parayanaha Agam Dhunmanti Karsnena Nihara Ihabhaskaraha. So he says that Kechid Kevalaya Bhaktya, it is only through devotion. Narayana Parayana, by becoming surrendered, falling at the feet of Lord Narayan and his devotees. What happens? Agam Dhunmanti Karsnena. Agam means huge amounts of sins. The sins which we have committed in millions and millions of lives, since time immemorial, and the greatest amount of sins, all are destroyed. Agham, dhunamanti, which means to destroy. Karsnena, niharam, iha bhaskaraha. Niharam means the fog. We were in Mayapur. I was taking a walk around the TOVP. And at around 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, walking, there was so much of fog, I couldn't see 3 feet ahead of me. So much of fog, and I was wondering, my God. And all these buses are there with their fog lights and everything, but none of these fog lights can dissipate the fog. But then as soon as the sun rises, then all the fog is gone, as if it was never there. So niharam iha bhaskara, bhaskara means the sun. So as the sun rises, so similarly when devotional service, when love of God arises, when humility arises within the heart, and affection and service attitude arises within a devotee's heart, then automatically what happens? All these anarthas are vanquished, mystic potencies are attained. And that is why the false ego is never vanquished in all other processes. The ego is not purified. And that ego still remains, that I am powerful, I am God. And only when in devotional service are we told that we are servants of the Lord, servant of the servants of the Lord. And that's why only a devotee can conquer Maya. Not a jnani, not a yogi. Because Maya is feminine in nature. She's a lady, Maya. And bhakti is also a lady. So she doesn't attract. Ladies are not attracted to it. It's opposites that attract. But jnan is masculine. And all other processes, like, you know, when you develop jnan, so you naturally attract the opposites. So therefore a person who is a jnani, he attracts Maya more. But a devotee is humble. And therefore he cannot attract Maya. He's free from Maya to that extent. So the process is, of course, a devotee may also use these processes to help. Like somebody was asking in one satsang in Khargar, that Prabhuji, kya hum pranayam kar sakte hain kya? Yoga se pehle, kya hum, asans kar sakte hain kya? So why not? If it helps, why not? Is it not? I mean, Like some people do yoga, some people even during sitting in the katha, like once I was sitting in Maharaj's katha, in yatra, all of a sudden one devotee was shaking like this. And I was thinking, oh my God, what happened to him? And he was like, and then I saw what's happened to him. And then he was doing bhastrika. I was saying, lecture is going on and he's doing bhastrika or something like that. And then once someone is like doing, during the class is going on and pranayama is going on and all those things. Okay, if it helps, why not? But there are alternatives. Bhakti yoga has got alternatives for everything. Like, you need exercise to keep fit. So, in Ashtanga yoga, you have to do asana. Katik Chakrasana, Padmasana, and all those things. But then in Bhakti Yoga also you have alternatives. What is that? Kirtan. Dance in Kirtan. Raise your hands and dance. So all the exercise, pranayama, everything is done in that. You don't need to separately do all those asanas. But you have to dance, obviously. If you don't dance, then you have to do in all those asanas. Is it not? So then, and what else? I mean, you feel sleepy during chanting. Man nahi lagta hai. So what do you do? No problem. In Bhakti Yoga, there is an alternative. Now in Ashtanga Yoga, you are going to sit in Padmasana and just try to focus your mind and all that. But Bhakti Yoga, what he does? Shushrushro Shabda Dhanasya Vasudeva Katharuchi. What do you do? Like one devotee, one person in the, in one seminar which I was doing in a company, one boy had some attention deficit syndrome. He could not focus for more than 30 seconds. 30 seconds ke baad, gone. He does not know what you are talking about. So he was saying, Prabhu, ye mind ko kaise control karne ka? So then I told a regular story. I said, one person was there in his house. Chori ho gaya uske ghar pe. Sab kuch chori ho gaya. He went to the police to lodge an FIR. Police walon ne ka, list banao. Kya kya chori ho gaya? Sir, jewelry chori ho gaya, sona, diamonds, mobile phone, laptop, everything. Huge list of all the things that went. Police inspector was saying, "Arey, sab kuch gaya, kuch bacha hai kya ghar pe? Kuch bacha hai?" Bola, "Sirf TV bacha hai." "Sirf TV bacha hai? Wo kaise?" "Kyunki jab chori hua, main TV dekh raha tha." Bola. बोला तू समाधि में था क्या? समाधि? What concentration? My God, not disturbed. So I asked him, क्या सीखा तुमने? बोला हाँ, मतलब when you are liking something, you do not have to say मन लगाओ. You don't have to say, is it not? But when you have natural interest for something, you will be attracted because mind always goes to those things that you are attracted to. So naturally everyone are yogis. Everyone is yogi. Only that some are bhogis. Their meditation is on sense gratification. But yogis are meditating on Krishna. All are doing meditation only. What is the mind? Mind means meditate, is it not? But we are meditating on sense gratification. Yogis meditate. Yogi and bhogi. We don't have to be bhogi. We have to become yogis. From bhog to yoga. That is the process. So how do you do that? When you develop an attraction. And how do you develop an attraction? When you serve. When you develop an attitude, a humble attitude, then naturally there is ecstasy in your heart. And when there is ecstasy in your heart, when you have respect, this person is speaking, our guru is speaking. You want to come and hear, what is he speaking? Oh, wonderful, I want to hear. I want to hear katha. Oh, chanting of the Hare Krishna is so wonderful. And then naturally when you sit to chant, you are focused. There is no, for that we have to avoid offenses. So there are always alternatives. So there is Ashtanga Yoga and then there is Navaveda Bhakti. Then there are 8, here we have 9. More options, better. Is it not? So the most simplest process is to chant Hare Krishna and that is the way how we can attain the perfection in life of love of God, which is the ultimate goal of all yoga processes. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, aur Bhakta Vrinda ki. कौन प्रेमानंदी